Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. This week we're celebrating Passover, so we're offering you a contemporary story, This Night of Nights by Sarah Lerner. Sarah was born in London to a British Jewish mother and a Canadian Jewish father. She studied at Bristol University, where she gained a degree in sociology and philosophy. She then moved back to London, where she qualified as a solicitor. Lerner lives in Hackney, East London. She combines fiction writing with her work as a legal aid lawyer. Her work has been published in the Jewish Literary Journal and in Local Voices, a collection of writing by Hackney-based authors. This Night of Nights is a work of fiction. It juxtaposes the story and commemoration of Passover with a soldier's thoughts and experiences in the trenches during World War I. The story is partly inspired by a letter from Sarah's great-uncle Izzy Epstein, which was written in the trenches at Pesach. Izzy was gassed at Ypres and died soon after the war. This Night of Nights was first published in JewishFiction.net, which is the only English-language journal, either in print or online, devoted exclusively to the publishing of Jewish fiction. The journal is free, and you can subscribe to it by going to the link on this page. Saul sits apart from the others on an empty ammunition box and writes how much he misses them. He's waiting for his Passover parcel to arrive. It should be in this afternoon's mail, a special parcel containing matzahs, apples, raisins, cinnamon, salt, parsley, bitter herbs, sweet almond cake, and kosher for Passover wine. He will celebrate this night of nights in the trenches with the contents of his parcel. Around him, in the platoon's quarters, the boys are getting ready for their return journey to the front line, where they will spend the next 2 days. As he writes to his family, he thinks of the frantic preparations for the first night of Passover that will be keeping them busy at home. At 6:30 in the evening, the platoon sets off on its 3-mile march back to the trenches, but Saul's parcel has not arrived. He will get no mail now for 3 days. He trudges with the others along scarred roads. Above them, the sky is clear with a full moon and stars. There's a chill in the air, but walking along in his uniform, he soon warms up. His thoughts are far away from Flanders and with the smartly dressed crowd making for the synagogue. Mama and his sisters will have new outfits for Passover. For Rosa, a pretty frock. For Mama, a dress and tasseled shawl. For Sadie, a fancy skirt and blouse. He smells the heavy air of the synagogue, warm and close from all those people. He sees the lights and hears the chanting. He thinks also, though he won't mention this in his letter, of dark-eyed Renee, her sudden flashing smile, her inward-looking beauty, her hair such a deep brown it's almost black. He wonders if she thinks of him as she stands in the women's gallery. She will surely be reminded of his absence when she looks down at Dada and Ellie among the swaying men. He's brought back to earth by the boom of a big gun. The star shells shoot up through the sky. His platoon is being fired at as they approach the line. He scrambles down with them to take shelter in the ditches at the side of the road. He crouches there shivering. He pictures his family gathered around the table and hears the musical clink of glasses and tableware. He hasn't been this homesick since he landed. If only he were with them now in the place that, despite his absence, they surely will have laid for him. When the firing ceases, they march on. He's relieved when they arrive to find his platoon is not on the front line, but in a reserve dugout about 100 yards back. So at least he won't be firing at another human being on this night of nights. He might even have shot someone who was also celebrating Passover, for there are Jewish boys out there fighting for the Kaiser. As soon as they're settled, he gets a fire going, makes some cocoa, and recites the blessing over the wine. Blessed art thou, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has created the fruit of the vine. He raises his cup and says quietly to the dear folks at home. He makes another toast silently to the beautiful Renee. He knows his family is thinking of him. He hopes that Renee is missing him also. He hears the clink of silver and china. He sees the sparkle of glass at those Passover tables back home as he sips his cocoa. He takes out a biscuit in place of the matzahs and says, "This is the bread of affliction which our fathers ate in the land of Egypt. All who are hungry, let them come and eat. All who are needy, let them come and celebrate Passover." He blocks out the sound of the big guns roaring across the firing line as the sweet biscuit dissolves on his tongue. He thinks of the meaning of Passover, escape from slavery, a journey to a promised land. There's no escape from him, though, or for the other men of his platoon, from this war. They're all stuck behind the lines. If they no longer wanted to fight, they couldn't run away, and if they tried, they would be court-martialed and shot as deserters. It's the same, he supposes, for the Germans on the other side. The other boys are looking at him, though they keep a respectful silence. "I pray this war will end soon and that God brings us all home safely to our families," he says. "I'm thinking of my family at home tonight, celebrating the Jewish Passover." Some of the boys frown and shift, but others look at him with open faces. And so he decides to explain Passover. For the Jewish people, this night is different from all other nights because on this night we recount the story of our escape from slavery in Egypt. We drink not one but four glasses of wine and recline in our seats like kings. He talks of the taskmasters whipping the slaves and the slaying of the Hebrew firstborn. He mentions the plagues, but not in too much detail, as he finds their cruelty disturbing. His voice shakes as he speaks of how the Red Sea parted to let the Israelite slaves escape. The boys listen quietly. "That's all right, old man, we understand," Dick says when Saul has finished. None of the 10 other soldiers in this dugout with Saul are Jews, yet they would share their last crumb with him if he asked for it. Towards midnight, the other boys settle down for the night, but Saul's mind is too full for sleep. It was that final plague, the slaying of the Egyptian firstborn, which broke Pharaoh's will. So Moses and Aaron drove home their advantage and negotiated the Exodus, a brief passage of time to escape, not long enough even for the bread to rise. Moses was not dealing with a stranger. He was brought up in the Egyptian court, seeing Pharaoh as a father figure. He would not even have lived to lead the Israelites out of slavery if it were not for the compassion of the Egyptian princess who found him when he was a baby, floating amongst the bulrushes. The Egyptians were not all evil, just as those Germans in the opposite trenches are not all evil. At first, Saul hadn't wanted to join up. He couldn't imagine killing another man. He remembered the words of the psalm, "Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall men make war anymore." But then there were the posters, "Your country needs you," and he had to do his duty. It seems to Saul, as he listens to the sound of battle around him, that there is no such thing as an enemy. He pulls himself out of his reverie and continues his letter by candlelight as the bullets hit the bank overhead. At 3 a.m., Dick shakes him, dragging him from sleep. There have been casualties. We have to go forward, he says. It's what Saul has been dreading, but he follows Dick, his limbs stiff and cold as they move towards the firing line while the cruel stars glitter overhead. By the time they arrive, the guns are quiet. Saul dozes against the side of the trench, though he knows he shouldn't sleep. Just now there's no shooting, but at any moment there could be a command to attack the enemy, to shoot perhaps at one of those other boys who, like him, is celebrating Passover. He opens his eyes in the gray light of early morning. On the other side of the trench, a clump of grass sticks out, surrounded by bare earth. The sun rises slowly, its rays lighting up the drops of dew that cling to the grass. On the front line, nature has almost been destroyed, but a few miles away, on French farms, the orchards are heavy with blossom. If Saul were at home, he would get out his paints and spend hours trying to capture the pattern and color of the blooms. If he was happy with his painting, he might include it in the portfolio he was preparing for submission to art school when the war broke out. The afternoon continues to be quiet. As the sun rises high over Flanders, he whiles away the time with Dick and some of the others playing cards. Towards five, there's a noise, a hum at first, but then it's clearly shouting coming from somewhere further down the line. A bunch of the boys scramble up to put their heads over the top, and Saul follows them. 200 or 300 yards away, the spring air is filled with a strange yellow cloud, which hovers just above the ground. It's not hanging still, though, it's coming towards them. "Get down," someone shouts, and then he hears, "Gas!" It's all around them, all over them. The smell is intense, sharp, and acrid. Saul's eyes are running. His throat hurts. "Cover your nose and mouth," someone yells. He sees other boys douse their handkerchiefs with water and cover their faces, for they have no gas masks. Saul does the same, but it's ineffective. He can't breathe without inhaling the stuff, and the stench is horrific. He crouches low in the bottom of the trench as if taking shelter. He coughs, a painful rasping which hurts the back of his throat and his chest. After a while, he struggles to breathe at all. He feels as if he's drowning, like an Egyptian chasing the Hebrew slaves. Soon the waters will cover him. The Israelites sang in triumph and praised God when they saw the Egyptian army drowning. The deep waters have covered them. They sank to the depths like a stone. But God has made a mistake. Saul has done nothing wrong. He's not an Egyptian slaver. He's a Jewish boy fighting for the king. When they were safely on the other side of the Red Sea, Miriam the prophetess took a timbrel in her hand and started to sing. The women followed her, dancing and singing. "Sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. Both horse and driver he has hurled into the sea." A rabbi once told Saul that the singing made God angry. "The work of my hands has perished, and you sing?" Each breath is more painful than the last. Saul curls up, waiting for it to end. "Get up! Get to higher ground!" someone shouts. Hands take hold of him, pulling him out of the trench. He can't open his eyes. They place one of his hands on the shoulder of the man in front of him to guide him. He forces his eyes open and sees piles of bodies lying by the side of the road. It hurts too much to look, and he closes his eyes again. "Christ, there's hundreds of them," someone says. "We'll send back for help. We can't do any more," another man replies. Saul staggers along, gasping and trembling. He's grateful to be helped to safety. He's in a worse state than many of the men around him, but plenty of them, including Dick, are panting and short of breath. He wonders how many firstborns, how many boys on both sides of this war have died, and if he will be one of them. Towards midnight, they get back to the platoon's quarters. Someone gives Saul a blanket, and he lies on the ground. "We've got this far. We'll be all right," Dick says, coughing. Saul knows that gas has invaded their bodies, but he doesn't know how far the poison will spread. He thinks of his family and his unfinished letter. He wants to have a future. He wants Renee to be his sweetheart. He wants to go to art school. The soldiers fighting for the Kaiser, some of them Jews, have done this, but the boys from his platoon, none of them Jews, have rescued him. In the weeks since he landed, Saul has stood for hours and days in the trenches, firing towards the Germans on the opposite side. He doesn't know who he has killed or how many. He doesn't remember how he came to be a soldier. A soldier needs an enemy, otherwise there's no point to his existence. He wants to stand on the front line and shout for all to hear, but he can only whisper, "Nation shall not lift up." He lies on the ground struggling for breath on this night unlike any other. We hope you liked this story, and all of us at Radio Sefarad would like to wish all of our listeners a happy Passover. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner @RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.